Good afternoon, everyone. It's Alan Murabayashi speaking to you from Photo Shelter World Headquarters today for another episode of I Love Photography Live. You might be watching us on YouTube at YouTube/Photo Shelter, or maybe you downloaded the podcast from iTunes, but you really should be watching the broadcast on YouTube because you can see not only my face, but the face of my co-host, Sarah Jacobs, who has the perfect, as she refers to, the Miley Cyrus lighting effect. What's going on, Sarah? I missed you in the past 2 weeks.
I know. We missed you. We're glad you're back.
I'm glad to be back. I was in France, in Paris. I was actually in London for a day and saw a great exhibit of David Bailey's work, the English portraitist that's at the National Portrait Gallery. And let me tell you something about David Bailey. Mm-hmm. That guy is a very good portraitist. That's all I really want to say.
Good. And you met some...
Yeah, I met some Photo Shelter peeps out there. It was good. But, you know, it's funny because you talked to them and I said, oh, I came over to London and I went to the National Portrait Gallery and I went to go see the Bailey exhibit. And they go, oh, yeah, he's good. He's good. And you detect a little bit of hesitance in the voice. Turns out the guy's kind of a jerk.
Oh, no.
As you can imagine, you know, these, you know, artists, very successful artists, yeah, maybe it goes to their head a little bit. And obviously he's getting up in age as well. I think he's probably in his 80s now, I think. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't diminish the fact in my mind that he's a very, very great portraitist. Now, the other thing I will say is he did shoot some more documentary style stuff along the way of his career. Not as good.
Oh, okay.
Not as good.
And that, I guess that didn't humble him much.
Well, I think as long as he keeps producing pretty great work, that he's okay with himself.
Right. Well, his work is amazing, so. And he's 80. The guy's 80.
Yeah,
he's
a, I know. You've got to give him a break there. I should remind people at the start of the broadcast of your favorite hashtag. Hashtag I love photo.
Favorite hashtag, yeah.
In case you want to say anything to us about photography or our outfits or our lighting situation, particularly Sarah's lighting situation, go ahead and give us a shout out on Twitter at hashtag I love photo. We got a lot to talk about today, Sarah,
yeah.
Besides David Bailey. And why don't we start actually with something that we've mentioned before, which is the new 55 film project on Kickstarter. For those of you who don't know, Polaroid and almost everybody stopped producing large format instant film for the 4x5 and 8x10 cameras. So this guy, Bob Crowley, got it in his head that he's going to recreate this stuff. And for, I don't know, it's probably been maybe 3-4 years that they've been working on formulations and figuring out how to get the pods and all this kind of stuff that's involved with this very mechanical analog type of film. And finally, about a month ago, he launched a Kickstarter project. And the Kickstarter project is to productionize the creation of this 4x5 instant film, which is going to produce a negative as well as a positive. So it's pretty cool. And they're not trying to exactly reproduce Polaroid Type 55 film, which was that black and white film.
Right. That would have been too easy.
Yeah, that way. It's very, very easy. No. So they're trying to productionize it. They have a $400,000 goal. And look at this. They're at $328,926 with only 3 days to go. So it's very important that you support this. David Burnett's behind this thing. A lot of great photographers who have shot film, particularly this larger format film, are on board with this thing. Now, the interesting thing about this is Crowley himself, you know, he's been writing these updates as you can on Kickstarter. And he says, you know, if we can't raise the funds, then I guess it's a pretty good indication of the interest in this kind of thing. And if it's not really economically viable, then it shouldn't be. Then it shouldn't be. We shouldn't try to, like, subsidize this. But Kickstarter isn't a subsidy. Kickstarter is actually an investment in the product.
Right, right.
I've shot some 4x5. I have a 4x5 camera in my apartment. I love it. Mm. I think it's cool.
Yeah. No, I think the closest I've gotten to this is, I have a Polaroid pack camera, which was made, I think, in the late 70s or something, and I have to use Fujifilm now for it. But, you know, there's something about peeling back, you know, that peel where it's just like it reveals it and it just feels awesome. So
yeah, and you know, Fuji is still producing that Instax stuff.
Right.
But they're only producing it in that Instax form factor. It's a pretty small image, relatively speaking, compared to a 4-inch by 5-inch, or as the British call it, the 5x4, or the 10x8, as I found out on the trip. But that's the Kickstarter New 55 project. Please support it. I really want to get some 4x5 for my camera.
Okay, maybe I'll pitch in a few dollars.
Yeah, put in $25 or something. And for those of you who really love it, you know, they have a $9,000 level there that you can get into and really help us hit that level. Speaking of kind of, you know, retro look, you come across stuff on the internet. It's unattributed a lot of times. It makes you feel a little bit bad for professionals because you kind of want to know who shot it and make sure that they get proper credit. But sometimes you can't find that information. Such was the case when I came across a nostalgic look at teens in the 1980s. Now, Sarah, I was a teenager in the 1980s, and so this seems remarkably familiar to me for some reason. You know, these Dove shorts, these very kind of like high-waisted short shorts and the feathered hair.
Oh, God, the Pac-Man arcade.
Oh, the Pac-Man, the kind of Finstash dude, you know, these...
Oh, we still got the Finstash dude.
Yeah. I mean, this is just hilarious to me. It literally looks like I went to high school with these people.
That's great.
But I think that's sort of the wonderful thing about photography. And you know, when we talk about inducing nostalgia, like this is real. This is a real nostalgia that I'm feeling looking at this stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think that there were less photos that were being shot. Film was something that was a little more special back in the day. But man, it's great to look at old photos.
No filters on these.
No filters. You don't need it. You know, film. Does not really age that well, so there.
right.
Speaking of old film, it seems like every other week we come up with a new photo that was found at like a swap meet or a flea market or some garage sale.
Mm-hmm. It's one of your favorite things.
It's one of my favorite things. I you know, this whole concept of found photos is really fantastic. And I mean, seriously, look at this thing. Over 400 photos from 1938 Italy, including one of Hitler, found on film purchased at a thrift shop. Are you kidding me?
Yes. Yeah, but it's confirmed. This is confirmed that it's of Hitler from the person who found it. I don't know how credible
so
it
maybe
is.
Maybe it's not Hitler, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it looks like he was checking out YouTube videos of Hitler to try to figure out if the photo was indeed of Hitler.
So this is the shot. It's like a drone photo, except it wasn't taken with a drone. It's just like a guy at a high vantage point.
Right.
And, you know, they kind of blew up the photo a little bit or just kind of magnify that one section. And he says the dude in this convertible is Hitler.
Right.
On some other fact. Yeah, I mean, who knows whether, you know, let's say it is. That's pretty cool.
Let's say it is. Yeah.
Let's say it's not. It's still pretty cool that we found photos that were, you know, 80 years old or whatever it is, whatever the math is.
True.
So keep, I probably have undeveloped roles in my house somewhere to develop.
No, just don't. Just let them be discovered, Alan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just leave them. Let them be discovered, since it's your favorite thing that people find these photos, these negatives.
Oh, maybe I should. You think the modern equivalent will one day be like a compact flash card that you find and you go, wow, look at this. We don't even have the technology to read this anymore, this compact flash card.
Yeah, that's like they just found Andy Warhol's floppy disks and recovered some of his work. From the early 80s. So yeah, it can happen.
The old floppy. They found Andy Warhol's floppy disks, and they have work off of it. Yeah, that's incredible.
They do. It is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I still have like what were they called? Zip drives, and I have all these weird formats in a little box above my computer of stuff I can no longer read.
Oh wow.
That I'm a little curious about, but I think I've for the most part copied everything over, but. It is an interesting thing. Leica created the world's most boring ad. That was kind of their marketing gimmick, was to name it the world's most boring ad. And it consists of 45 minutes of a technician, let me read this, meticulously hand polishing the aluminum camera shell of a new Leica T, which is their mirrorless camera, highlighting the brand's commitment to quality.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest Leica fan, because I think that they're sort of, you know, they're overpriced. I mean, obviously the quality's unparalleled. But I think they're overpriced for what they are, and I think that there's this celebrity cachet about having the Leica, which has nothing to do with the great photographers who shoot with Leica. I just think that it's kind of like a status symbol for a lot of people who don't really love photography. But I got to say, this is kind of a cool ad.
It is. Did you, how much, but here's the question, how many minutes of this did you end up watching?
Well, you know, it's like that Pharrell video.
Right.
Which is a 24-hour video. I feel like I should just put the Leica thing on in the background.
Right.
And kind of do the zen of enjoying the video.
Yeah, just tune in whenever something perks your ears. Yeah.
Like a slight increase in the rate of polishing or something like that.
You're like, oh, what's happening? What's happening now? I gotta switch to the tab.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep it on loop, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a high definition Vimeo video, so you know, in case you need to get on with that, you can do that. That's all we have to say about that. We talk a lot about different types of photography. We talk a lot about different types of technology. We've talked about drones, but I don't know that we've talked about satellite photography before. Have we talked about satellite photography?
No, we haven't actually.
Yeah, because, you know, satellite photography, well, I guess we know a lot of satellite photography from Google Maps. But really, prior to the advent of Google Maps, satellite photography was kind of spycraft-ish. The average person was not looking at this type of stuff. Well, it turns out when we were in the Cold War and we had all of these satellites up there taking spy photos, they ended up finding 10,000 lost cities.
See, this is our more legit found photos of the week.
This is real found. Well, found cities.
Found cities. Exactly.
It just kind of blows my mind. I mean, I think it's fascinating because obviously there's a lot of features at ground level that you're just not aware of. You're walking on a hill and you can't tell at that vantage point that it's actually an old settlement. But this is a National Geographic article on how these Cold War reconnaissance photos. Here's the subheadline: triple the number of known archaeology sites across the Middle East. And it's not like they were just out in the open. You know, back in Cambodia, they were actually out in the open, and people just, you know, they were kind of overgrown with some jungle for some of these old temples. But these were like kind of underneath the ground a little bit, or they needed to be excavated. But this is incredible. Satellite photos tripled the number of archaeology sites. What new discoveries are we going to find next? Atlantis? I don't know. This is the perfect time to say hashtag I love photo. I think that's...
Are we going to find Atlantis?
Hashtag
I love photo.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of an uplifting piece. Less uplifting. Although, let's talk about this for a little while. So the decline of newspapers, this is on Slate, hits a stunning milestone, the lowest revenue since the 1950s.
For newspapers, yeah.
Print ad revenues are the lowest since they've been since 1950s. Now, in a sense, this isn't so surprising.
Mm-hmm.
We've kind of known that. You know, my first internet company was Hot Jobs, and we took all of these classified ads off of newspapers, stole all of their revenue, put them online, made it easier to search, made it easier to apply. Increase productivity for the workers, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. So I think that was actually a good outcome for that kind of stuff. But newspapers, from the journalistic standpoint serves such an important function, it's sad that obviously circulation goes down, advertisers are less interested, everybody's moving to the web. What does this mean? But when I thought about this, I'm actually okay with it because I think that companies are finding ways, like the New York Times is finding ways to monetize stuff online and bring more content at a more rapid pace. And when you look at things like photography, slideshows that are available online, you can never print that many photos. Sure, maybe they're not as marquee as being above the fold on page one, but now you can do 15 photos. You know, you look at like the Lens blog in the New York Times. You can feature a photographer, put 20 of his or her photos up there, and you could have never done that back in the day, at least not on a daily basis. So what does it all mean?
Richer content for everybody.
Richer content for everyone. Let's just hope that there's enough advertising revenue to pay good wages to the journalists and photojournalists to continue to produce high quality content.
Yeah, I have to say I just signed up for a 6-month trial of the Wall Street Journal. I know that's my first newspaper subscription. We'll see how it goes.
How's it going so far?
Well, I just got my first one this morning, so yeah, I'll check in a couple weeks, let you know.
Let us know. You have a little piece here on a photo editor.
Oh yeah,
one of your favorites.
Yeah, one of my favorites. So the Fader magazine.
The Fader, yeah.
Yeah, their photo editor Jordy Wood was interviewed on Lent Roller. And he's been the photo editor for a couple years, and this is just a great look into his path that led him to this job. I mean, he had no photo editing experience before, but he had a professional relationship with the Fader shooting for them. He just talks about how he's found photographers and also the process of choosing a photo, because, you know, coming from him being a photographer, he thought, oh, you know, photo editors always choose the worst pictures that I give them. But, you know, he's kind of learned the decision process that goes behind that, so he gives a little insight into that. It's a real nice, in-depth look.
So first, tell us what the lint-roller.com is.
The Lint Roller.
It's like too cool for school. You know, this is not...
Yeah.
This is not the New York Times.
No, it's not the New York Times. They interview a lot of, like, fine art photographers and documentary photographers in the art space. And they put a lot of GIFs up. They have a lot of GIFs, and GIFs are always fun.
We love GIFs. Oh, there was the portrait of him at the bottom. Let's see if we can get to it, which is an animated GIF or GIF, as some people say.
Oh, yeah, GIF.
Just kind of a little parallax animated GIF thing going on.
Yeah, that looks like it was taken probably with a camera with two lenses and then put together post. I don't know. I don't know how that was created.
Who knows? Who knows about this technology stuff? It's cool. No, I think you're right. I think photo editing is sort of mystical or mystifying to photographers who don't necessarily understand the process. And I think the other interesting point is I meet so few photo editors that like were in college and said, I want to be a photo editor.
Right.
Does anyone say I want to be a photo editor as their first thing, or is it always like I want to be a photographer and then it's like, oh, I want to be a photo editor?
I don't know. I kind of wanted to be a photo editor.
Oh.
So that was, yeah.
Yeah, but you're also a photographer.
That's true, yeah.
Hmm. So our friends over at Getty, who we like to poo-poo a lot, because obviously they do some questionable things for the industry.
Right.
It's great for Getty. It's not so great for everyone else. But this was interesting, huh? Photos.com. What was it, about a month ago when we talked about how they were making several million of their images free for non-commercial use.
Right.
And that was their, I wouldn't say it's we give up. It's their, to them it was like we're evolving as quickly as possible and we're trying to react to the fact that stuff gets stolen, so at least let's get attribution and get some big data off of this stuff.
Right.
This is photos.com and it's actually a print sales mechanism.
Yeah, they're kind of copping off 20x200, huh?
A little bit. And you know, we love Jen Beckman and 20x200 and whatnot. I gotta say, this isn't a bad idea. It looks like it's well designed. I was looking at some of the prices. You know, like this baby chimp photo here.
they're starting around 90, right?
Yeah, and this guy was like $200.
Okay.
So it's not unreasonable, and I think, you know, when you talk about wanting wall art for your home, getting really, really nice stuff that's a print and not a poster, it's not a bad price.
No. That's the adult move, to get it framed and that not is a poster. The adult
move. You know, but
don't get posters anymore.
Yeah, that's sort of college.
It is college.
The thing that strikes me about all of these different marketplaces that are coming out, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff for stock that has emerged. We've seen a lot of print marketplaces, etc. It's kind of the problem of too much content. It's like, how is Getty going to advertise that photos.com exists in the same way that how does every other print site advertise that they exist? Is it all SEO that I type in photo for my wall and I get these sites and then I say, oh, wow, I've discovered a new site? It's a challenge. There's great content, but there's too much content.
Right. That's true, because it's not like the same people that are going to Getty for stock usage imagery, you know, they're not looking for prints. They specifically go into Getty for digital or other media use, and so they can't just directly send that audience to photos.com for the
moment. Different audience.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I'd be interested to know what the cut is to the photographer, because Getty obviously that's kind of the biggest complaint I would say about Getty, is that they keep pulling back the percentage that they give the photographers. Who knows? I mean, I would love to, you know, if you're selling stuff through photos.com and you're a photographer, let us know what the deal is with that. We'd love to hear from you. You can hashtag I love photo.
Hashtag I love photo.
Over on the Lens blog, you know, James Estrin, Jim, as we like to call him, is a Facebook friend of mine. So he posts a lot of stuff that comes off of the Lens blog that he helped found over on the New York Times site. And there was a pretty interesting piece yesterday. And so let me see if I can summarize this. I always do a horrible job of summarizing, so apologies when I get all my facts mixed up. But this was the case of an Instagram account, and originally it was Everyday Africa.
Yeah.
It was the Everyday Africa Project.
I've been following that for a while. Love that Instagram.
And so another guy was inspired by that work, Ian Thompson Jansen Lundquist, and he created the Everyday Asia Instagram. He posted one photo, and then it sat idle for like several months. And then the Everyday Africa guy and the Everyday Asia guy started talking via the internet and came up with a set of almost like a mission statement and a philosophy for posting. Ian Thomas went out and found a few friends in Asia to be contributors. He's in Delhi. He found some other friends in different parts of Asia, and then they created the Everyday Asia Instagram account. And I got to say, with all of the, I've become very guilty of this, of posting food photos. But I like to think my food photos are better than the average food photo, but that's just my ego. But it's nice to see not food photos. It's nice to see some really well shot, well exposed, well conceived photos.
Mm-hmm. Coming through your feed.
Coming through my feed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like this, the Everyday Asia, Everyday Africa, is a really great example for just, you know, the powerful use of social media to break stereotypes, because that's what these Instagrams are all about, is breaking the stereotypes of these countries, that the imagery that we normally see coming from Africa and coming from Asia. And I love the idea of that, and so I think these are great projects. And I also love that just because of the handle, the Everyday Asia, you know, snagged, that Ian Thompson snagged, that got Everyday Africa in touch with him. You know, it's just crazy how that kind of evolved and worked, and now, you know, he's got this great feed of work. So
when I saw this the other day, the first thought that crossed my mind was, I need to register every day in New York.
Yes, exactly.
And guess what I didn't do?
You didn't do it.
I didn't do it because I was like, well, I'm not going to shoot this every day. This is crazy. I have stuff to do.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, we know a bunch of photojournalists and we know obviously a bunch of street photographers here in New York. Somebody ought to organize that.
Yeah.
Somebody whose name doesn't rhyme with Alan Murabayashi.
Who's going to take over everyday New York? That's going to be in conflict with Humans of New York.
Well, that was my other thought, is someone's already kind of doing it. Mm. But I think there's a lot of opportunity. You know, obviously, Humans of New York focuses on the humans, but there's so much in terms of the architecture and the development of the city and non-portrait type photography opportunities that exist out there. And is the case, I think that these types of projects end up being some pretty good marketing material for photographers who embark on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if it's not already snagged, everyday New York or everyday NYC or everyday Brooklyn, I mean, there's so many different ways you can slice and dice it. You know, if you're out there listening to this, start this in your own community. Get multiple contributors, get followers on it, get your name out there. And, you know, we've been thinking about Instagram forever.
Like, yeah.
Why is Instagram so potent? Well, there's always this whole concept of the stream, right, that we don't have to wait until the project is finished and do the edit and curate and da-da-da-da. We can publish in the stream. But the other thing is that you have direct access to your audience. There's no photo editor that's interceding between you and the publishing of this stuff. It's the most direct way to talk to an audience with photography. And so that's why I think that it's a great project for communities to sort of embark on.
And to tell their own stories. Yeah, love it.
But, you know, I didn't even think about this whole angle that you brought up of kind of breaking down stereotypes. But I think that's so important. That's like a great observation.
Mm-hmm.
More great photography. We saw the American Photography 30 come out the other day. There were, 622 photos in this gallery. I probably went through about 100-something of them.
Okay, you did better than me. I went through about 70.
They're like pretty awesome photos.
Amazing photos. Yeah, it was nice to see some familiar names on there, like Chris Buck, celebrity portrait photographer, and still life photographer Jamie Chung, who I really love. But then a lot of names that I didn't recognize. And I mean, that makes sense out of, you know, 622. So.
And it always amazes me kind of when you see a set of super well-curated images that have nothing to do with one another, how different the look can be. And I've always said, like, photography is such a literal medium, but photos end up looking so different, even of the same subject matter.
Right.
So it's just kind of cool. Well, one of your favorites was the, the dead whale selfie.
The dead whale selfie. And look at that. Look at the caption. The caption just reads none. There's no caption.
What? You don't need a caption. Everyone knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah, you're right. But I would like some context to this photo. That is bizarre. It's a girl in front of a beached whale taking a selfie with her phone.
Looks like a pretty big whale, too.
Yeah. As most whales.
That's why we call them whales.
Yeah.
But check that out. That's ai-ap.com, American Photo 30, American Photography 30. Great, great stuff going on over there. So now we come to a new feature that we came up with yesterday, which is at the end of every month, we want to talk about the five coolest pieces of stuff, photo stuff.
Photo stuff, yes.
And I hesitate to call it like the five best pieces of gear. It's not supposed to be a best feature. That's not the intent of this. It's just stuff, photo stuff that caught our eye that we thought had a coolness factor to it.
Oh, man, look, we're already defending ourselves.
I know, we have to, because people are going to be like, well, what about this and what about that? And that's a dumb selection. You know, anytime you put out a list, you obviously run the risk of excluding something, either because you're ignorant or because you didn't think it should be on the list.
Right.
And everybody's obviously entitled to their opinion, and this is all this is. It's our opinion of five cool things, or as they say in France, Trey Brooklyn. Apparently is a colloquialism for cool. So this is Trey Brooklyn.
Wow, I love that.
What's up with that?
Well, yeah. I love it.
I was busting out some French. I don't really speak French, but that's okay. So starting off with number five, and these are in no particular order. Starting off with number five, the Filson. Filson is a long-time old school bag maker that has, like, you know, any brand that's been around for like over 75 years immediately nowadays has a story.
Oh yeah.
And a heritage and whatnot. And Filson, you know, they make luggage and all this kind of stuff. And they decided we need to make the world's best camera bag. So they created what they're calling the Filson Magnum in coordination with Magnum, the photo collective. And they got two of our friends, David Allen Harvey and Steve McCurry, to consult on this bag. And from what I read, yesterday, May 1st, the Filson launched a flagship store in New York City, and they released this bag. Well, it was available for viewing, although it's not going to be available for purchase until later this summer.
I was trying to look in the bag.
Yeah, I know. I can't see.
But it looks very durable, and Filson, you know, they're known for that, so...
And both Steve and David were saying, you know, you don't want it to look like a camera bag, because obviously then it's a target for theft, et cetera, and you don't want to be identified as a photographer. But it needs to be very weatherproof, and there's got to be a lot of accessible pockets that's easily compartmentalizable, because we have a lot of stuff that we need to put in there. Yeah. So there's a coolness fact. Come on, Steve McCurry and David Allen Harvey.
It's very cool. It's very cool. We're it's high maintenance, our needs as photographers for our bags. Yeah.
I did speak to David Allen Harvey at a workshop last year, and he's like, I have so many bags.
Oh, really?
like a closet full of bags. And I think photographers, in addition to being sort of gear whores, they just love photo bags. It's like every new photo bag they got to try out.
Yeah, they're all bag ladies.
Yeah.
All these guys.
Number two, the Sony Alpha A7S. Well, Sony obviously has been really killing it on the innovation front. You've heard me talk more than once about my RX1, which I love. But they also came out with the A7 about 6 months ago, which was a removable lens system, ILC system, interchangeable lens system, mirrorless, etc. The A7S came out last month. The thing shoots 4K video.
Wow.
And has a sensor that can go up to that ISO 409,000, like the Nikon D4S. So 4K video, and the thing is tiny. If I had a need to shoot 4K video, then this would be a pretty cool thing. It is a pretty cool thing. And I saw a guy when I was in Paris and I was eating at this you know, fancy restaurant. This guy had not this camera, but an A7 to take his food photos. So they're out there. They're like nice and compact. I think particularly if you're like a food blogger type person, these smaller ILC-based cameras are so much nicer than walking into a fancy restaurant with a ginormous DSLR.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work. No.
Unwieldy, looks weird. You know, people are trying to enjoy their meal, and you're like, you're motoring at 10 frames per second. Not cool. The next one. So when I was a kid, Sigma did not have a good reputation as a lens manufacturer. Sigma had a reputation of being cheap. So when you were a kid like me in high school and you wanted like a lens, you'd get the Sigma because you couldn't afford the Canon or the Nikon. And I guess at some point in the past 2 or 3 years, they said, you know what, this is crazy. We're Sigma. We need to make some nice stuff. So they came out with the Art line of lenses. And one of the first ones that they came out with was the 35mm f1.4 lens for both Canon and Nikon, which outperformed Nikon and Canon's lenses by the DxO lens mark test. And this was the highly anticipated 50 millimeter F1.4 DG HSMA that came out. So the class is art.
Wow. Yeah, I've shot with Sigmas. That mine too. Those were my first lenses. But I love 50 millimeter. I've had the Canon Nifty 50, which is the 1.8, not as good. So maybe I'll upgrade, and instead of doing Canon, maybe I'll get this Sigma.
Maybe you should check it out. Maybe you should rent it before you buy.
Yeah, rent before I buy.
A lot of options there.
Rent before you buy. Hashtag I love photo.
Yeah, I love photo. This is not an inexpensive lens, by the way. You know, any good glass is obviously going to be expensive. This is a $949 50 millimeter f1.4 1.4 lens. But from everything that we've heard, they're maintaining the quality that they had with the 35 millimeter lens, and looks pretty cool. Hope to try one out soon. Number four on the list of five coolest things that happened in April, the Pentax 645Z. Now, there's something cool about medium format, number one. And we've seen a lot of photographers, David Hobby being one, Zach Arias being another, who have eschewed their 35 millimeter stuff and moved over to medium format because the quality is just that much better. The bit depth is better, the image size is better, et cetera. Peter Yang, who we love as well, shooting all medium format stuff. The problem with medium format historically has been it's very expensive.
Right.
I think the Hasselblad H5 or H4, whatever they have out now, it's like $40,000 for that system.
Yeah, just ridiculous.
A lot of money. So it totally makes sense if you're shooting commercial stuff and you rent it and you write it off to the client. A little hard to justify when you're a amateur shooter.
Yeah.
And even if you're a rich amateur shooter, I don't know, $40,000 is a lot of money. The Pentax 645Z is coming in, what was the price on that, like $8,000?
$8,000.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Kind of cool. Now, 645... I shot Hasselblad. It's my medium format. And I shot some Mamiya. So 6.6, 6.7, that's kind of, I like that. 6.45, not my favorite aspect ratio, but it's sort of like 35 millimeters, so who's going to complain about that? Big sensor. I don't know what they put on. What was it, like a 40 or 50 megapixel sensor on this thing?
I don't know.
More pixels than you need.
More pixels than you need. We haven't talked really about Pentax much. I haven't heard that name.
Yeah.
Been thrown around in a while. So yeah. This is interesting that they're coming in with this.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, I'm curious to try all of this stuff because it is on our list of five coolest Trey Brooklyn pieces of gear.
Trey Brooklyn, yeah.
Well, we started the broadcast talking about New 55. And we talked about how much we love this large format photography, and I don't know, there's just a quality. And, you know, you look at, like, David Burnett's stuff or Guy Rhodes' stuff from the Sochi Olympics, it just looks lovely. You know, it's just big. There's imperfections, you know, there's, like, vignetting on this stuff, but there's just a quality to film. And particularly with large format, I don't know if it's necessarily the bokeh, but there's something about the optics of large format that look cool. There's a real separation for me when I look at it between foreground and background elements that you just can't get from smaller format photography. So the last piece of the coolest equipment, going back to this 4x5, is this camera called the Wanderlust. And this thing is just cool. It's $149, doesn't include the lens, $149 plus shipping. Look at this thing. It's a 4x5 travel camera. Now, Graflex was like a travel, for 4x5, it was pretty much kind of a travel size camera. But this thing is tiny. So the film cassette, the film holder slides in the back of that thing. So I don't know, maybe you'll be able to use a Polaroid on that. I don't know, it's probably too thin to use a Polaroid. But
Well, that is kind of the question, because $149 is totally affordable.
But,
maybe, like, how much are these lenses going to run for you?
I'm sure they're expensive, but on eBay you could probably get... I mean, if you're not going for the best quality lens in the world, You're probably going to use lens for, I don't know, $500, $500,000, right?
Okay.
Shipping in the summer, and then they shot, you know, these photos in Brazil. Look at that. Look at this photo.
Bring it up. Bring it up.
How do I bring this up? Oh, I wasn't even sharing the screen there.
No.
So there's this this shot off of what do they call it? Pau Doce. I was just in Brazil, so I should know this. and you can see the Flickr gallery for more photos. There's this, you know, it's off of a prototype camera, so there's some imperfections in the photos, but I want to show people again this camera system. Like,
yeah,
it's just the tiniest, coolest little thing in the world.
It is super portable. Yeah, weighs 9.7 ounces. Like,
so for $149, granted you have to get the lens, that's doable. I might actually get that.
I'd borrow that. I would ask
you to borrow that. but the other thing to be aware of, and not to poo-poo our own cool list, but, you know, loading 4x5, you got to have a changing bag. Because let's assume, like, the holder doesn't look big enough. It doesn't look like a spring-loaded holder that you would use to put a Polaroid back in there. Hopefully I'm wrong. But if I'm not, then what you need to do is get a changing bag. You need to buy 4x5 sheet film. You need to get a bunch of holders. You got to load them up back in front. You got to put them in your new Filson bag because you're going to need a lot of camera bag space to hold them. You got to carry a light meter with you. To develop film, if you don't have your darkroom anymore, because everybody doesn't have a darkroom anymore, I think developing film, a 4x5 sheet in New York is about $2 to $3 per sheet. So it's not an inexpensive proposition. But nobody said photography was ever cheap.
No, but I do wonder if this price point, this $149 price point, is going to fool anybody, you know, into buying it. Like, oh, this is really cheap. And then they get it and they realize, I got to get all the film and I got to get the lens.
You got the newest Epson printer for $149, but your consumable costs are like $1,000 a year.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Damn you, Wanderlust Camera. Why did you do that to us?
So tricky.
We didn't talk about the weather at the top of the show.
No.
It might have been the first time ever, but it is a lovely day. Tomorrow also, this whole weekend's going to be lovely. Another great week for photography.
Yep.
And seeing a lot of people out in New York City. So again, if you want to start that every day in New York City, no one's stopping you.
Do it.
Maybe I should register and then sell that Instagram handle. Is that a thing yet?
I don't know. It should be. Yeah.
Well, that's it for another week. I just want to say one more shout out to our Brooklyn Nets, who are in a playoff game of their life. Nobody cares except for me. I'm a huge Brooklyn Nets fan.
That's very Trey Brooklyn.
Totally Trey Brooklyn. But Sarah, good to see you again.
Thank you. Good to see you too. We're glad you're back.
Another great show. We'll have a lot more to talk about next week on I Love Photography. So for Sarah Jacobs, this is Alan Murabayashi signing off. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.